Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the October 30th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Tuscola School Board, North Ward Helps Special Olympics by Ben Crane. In a presentation to the Tuscola School Board at their regular board meeting Monday night, five North Ward fourth graders, or K-Kids, are an offshoot of the Tuscola Kiwanis and raised $425 during their Pie in the Face event in North Ward. Of that total, $200 went to the Special Olympics, while the rest is being saved for upcoming events. The K-Kids plan to hold more fundraising events in the coming months. Among other presentations, Russ Lee handed out his 2023-2024 audit for the Tuscola School District. There are really no issues here, Lee noted. In his principal report, North Ward's Jason Wallace thanked the Tuscola Fire Department, Police Department, and Douglas County Sheriff's Office during the ALICE drill, which is the district's response plan for an active shooter event. He also noted important dates to put on the calendar: Tiger Trot on November 8th and Joe's Pizza Day on November 15th. Principal Jared Van Osdell updated the board on happenings at East Prairie, including academic improvements across the school. 59% of students met or exceeded standards in English language arts, while 28% did in math, up from 45 and 19% last school year. He also thanked parents and teachers for participating in parent-teacher conferences, as well as congratulated students on honor and high honor roll. Principal Justin Bozarth's report began with thanking Tuscola Community High School teachers Ali Yantas and Tara Waldrop for their contributions during the homecoming week. He also congratulated the Dama Club on a successful production, as well as Aaron Knofsky, Katie Mills, Chase Nixon, Jordan Quinn, Elena Smith, Savannah Taylor, and Lainey Yantas for making it into ILMEA District 5 ensembles. Superintendent Gary Alexander reported $879,000 in bills for the month. He also reminded the public about a question on the ballot this election that asked the public if they want to continue with township or an at-large voting method. Other items on the agenda included the approval of hiring of Amy Davis as special education teacher and Brandy Long as paraprofessional at North Ward. The board also moved the December 23rd meeting to December 19th. A number of donations were accepted at the meeting, including $1,700 from the Tuscola Rotary for the North Ward Playgrounds, tools from Judy and Ken Landek for the Industrial Arts Program, $1,900 from Bruce and Pat Dofitz for Tuscola School's Parent Support Groups, $50 from Rudy Hagber Farms for FFA, $100 from Kiwanis Club for Warrior Store, two separate $200 donations for Help a Child, $140 from the Class of 1954 for Help a Child, $30 for Connie Allen for Help a Child, and finally $2,500 from People's Bank and Trust for Help a Child. The next article, Arthur Village Board, Annual Auditor's Report Approved by Ariana Cherry. On Monday, October 21st, the Arthur Village Board held their most recent meeting where auditors McGuire, Juhas, Huffman, and Buckley, CPAs, discussed the annual auditor's report. They commented that the village was a very healthy institution. Some of the points covered included that the general account was up by $530,000 from last year and had $1 million in revenue. TIF funds were up $23,000 in revenue. It was suggested that the interest income from the money market account be allocated to both the water and sewer accounts and general account. After the discussion and review, the annual auditor's report was approved. Expenditures were approved in the amount of $130,000. Christy Miller presented information from the Arthur Association of Commerce regarding a proposal for package commercials from WCIA promoting shopping in Arthur during the holiday season. The commercials would air during the morning news at 9 a.m. and then at noon during CI Living and then again during the 4 to 6 p.m. news broadcasts. The cost of the package would be $2,100, with the village's portion of that being $1,100. The commercials would begin airing November 18th, and the board tentatively agreed to partner with AAOC. Police Chief Elliot Tinnen reported they had a squad vehicle on its last leg and wanted to give the board a heads up. He also said the department had a candidate in mind for the sergeant position and would like to introduce them to the board in the near future. In other business, the board discussed and approved a temporary sign application from the Arthur Ministerial Association for a sign every 3 months, up to four times a year, to promote blood drives. The sign, measuring 2x2, would be displayed for 1 week at a time. They approved a pay request number 6 from the Grenlow Construction Incorporated for the clarifier improvements at the WWTP in the amount of $411,000. The equipment for the improvement have been installed. They approved a proposal from Denora Water Technologies for the installation of the new cell and internal testing of the MIOX chlorine generator in the amount of $6,900. The payment is to pay for the labor, install the cell, and has 5-year warranty. And they approved a proposal from Leave It to Us Total Tree Care Plus LLC for tree and stump removals in the amount of $16,000, with the exception that the tree at 140 East Park Street would be double-checked. The next article, Tuscola City Council, Farewell to Longtime Tuscola City Officials by David Porter. There was a seismic shift in personnel at Tuscola City Hall Monday night as City Foreman Denny Cruzan attended his last meeting as an employee after 52 years of service, and City Attorney Andrew Biquette attended his last council meeting after 18 years. Biquette accepted a position in the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office. Mayor Dan Kleist presented Biquette with a commemorative clock and said the attorney has served the city very well and was very approachable. Biquette said, "The city has been great to me, and there have been around 400 council meetings since he began, longer than my kids have been alive." He said, "There was almost no sentence that has made me as proud as saying, I'm the city attorney for Tuscola." Matt Schweigart, a Tuscola High School alumnus, was appointed city attorney. Following a closed session, Toby Crabble was hired as full-time police officer starting October 29th at a rate of $20.81 per hour with a 1-year probationary period. Schweigart graduated from the University of Illinois with a degree in finance and a minor in Spanish. He was a member of the Campus Honors Program and was both a James Newton Matthews Scholar and an Edmund James Scholar. He attended law school at St. Louis and served as editor for the St. Louis University Law Journal. After working two different law firms, he founded his own firm in 2011 and opened an office in Tuscola in 2023. Amidst the changes, some things stay the same. Paul Wisovati was in attendance again this year to ask permission for the Salvation Army's bell-ringing fundraiser and to collect donations from the council members. The bell ringers will be out every Saturday through the end of the year. In other business, Casey McGee of Larson, Woodyard, and Henson reported on the city's annual audit. She said it was another excellent year for the city with no major or minor faults found in the bookkeeping. She said the city's balance is down $3.5 million this year due to capital investments, but the city still has $10 million in the bank. She said the property tax revenue is also down due to the end of the city's biggest TIF, tax increment financing, district. If you adjust for that, the tax revenue is up this year by $200,000, she said. Kleist noted another area community that was looking to borrow money to buy a fire truck. Tuscola has not had to do that, he said. Treasurer Alta Long also reported on the city's annual report and noted it will be in the newspaper this week. Holiday bonuses for full-time employees were increased this year to $200. Kleist said it had been $125 for the past 18 years. The city also approved a $45,000 contract with Uden Associates for architectural design for the pool house at Irvin Park. Kleist said, "We're probably not going to like any of the answers we're going to get, but we need to get them and make improvements." Utz is the same firm that designed the new firehouse, maintenance building, and improvement to the police department. Council member Tim Hui asked if voting for the contract meant that we'll do everything on its list. Kleist clarified the city would not be obligated to do any of the items recommended. Kleist also noted that the city has received the deed for the former church property at 307 South Court Street and plans to demolish. In his written report, City Administrator Drew Howell noted that while the city did not pay for the building, it did incur about $6,500 in expenses relating to past due taxes and closing costs. The next article, LAAH seeks $24.6 million school board referendum by Ben Crane. With a crucial referendum vote looming, Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond School District Superintendent Shannon Cheek has spearheaded a public education campaign to build support for a $24.6 million bond measure to renovate the local high school. Cheek, now in his 6th year leading the district, has made a community engagement a top priority, seeking to overcome skepticism and address concerns from residents about the scope and cost of the project. "When I first got here, it was clear the high school building needed some attention," Cheek said. "We've tried to be as transparent as possible, getting community feedback every step of the way." That feedback led the district to modify its initial proposal, removing the plan to house 6th through 8th grade students in the high school campus after hearing concerns from residents. Cheek said the current $24.6 million ask, with the district contributing to an additional $5 million from sales tax revenue, is focused squarely on addressing the high school's most pressing needs. Those needs are extensive, according to Cheek. The high school's industrial technology and agriculture spaces are cramped and outdated, forcing the district to limit enrollment in these popular programs. The building also has issues with handicap accessibility as well as security concerns, with Cheek citing the number of entrances and exits to the building. The building's two science labs require students to rotate through, and the cafeteria and dining areas are inadequate for the student population. Perhaps most critically, the high school lacks air conditioning, leading to frequent early dismissals on hot days. Cheek argued this not only disrupts the learning environment, but also makes it harder to attract and retain quality teachers. We're in a teacher shortage. This building's condition makes it harder to compete with districts that have newer, more modern facilities, Cheek said. To build support for the referendum, the district has held a series of informational meetings, released videos highlighting the facility's condition, and worked to dispel misconceptions about the tax impact. The school's district current tax rate is 3.55%. Compared to other area school districts in the area, such as Arcola, Tuscola, and Sullivan, all three are around 4.5%, according to Cheek. We're going to be right in line, if not a little lower, at 4.5%, said Cheek. Cheek acknowledged attendance at the meetings has been challenging at times, but he remains hopeful the community will recognize the necessity of the project. I wish we could get more people to come and walk through the building, Cheek said. I think they'd see it's in worse shape than they remember. Despite the challenges, Cheek has remained steadfast in his commitment to educating the community and building support for the referendum. He drew parallels to other small towns that have struggled after losing their schools, arguing that investing in the high school is crucial to preserving the community's identity and future. One of the biggest investments you can make, in my opinion, is your school, Cheek said. There's no fault of anybody previously. I mean, I think they've done a nice job being responsible with what they've spent. It's just, you know, as I described to people, it's tired. You know, maybe not tired, maybe asleep. While Cheek stopped short of predicting the referendum's outcome, he emphasized the difficult decisions the district would face if the measure failed. Without the proposed funding, he said the district would struggle to address the high school's most pressing needs, potentially leading to further deterioration of the facility and learning environment. It's going to make some decisions moving forward very difficult, Cheek said. We'll have to really consider what our next steps are. For Cheek and the district, the hope is that a successful referendum will secure the high school's future for years to come, preserving the small-town spirit that he believes is so vital to the community. Voters will have their say on election day. For Cheek, the challenge is now to continue to ensure the community understands the urgency of the high school's needs before that date. The next article, Atwood Meeting Held on School Referendum Vote, Next Meeting, October 30th, by Doris Elmore. The Vote Yes Committee for the CUSD No. 305 referendum held another meeting on Sunday afternoon at the First Baptist Church in Atwood. Jeremy Hale, chairman of this committee, and David McGrath gave a talk presenting the positives for voting yes for the addition and renovation of the ALAH High School. The total cost of the project is $29.6 million. The November 5, 2024 referendum asked voters to approve $24.6 million in bonds. The bonds are for 20 years. The district is committing $5 million in sales tax revenue toward the project. Work is needed on the HVAC systems, doors, electrical and plumbing systems. Upgrades are needed to keep the students, teachers, and administrators safe. Additional security is definitely needed. Hale discussed the bullet points at the information distributed. The points included giving students tools to succeed, discussing the industrial arts ag department, science lab expansion, general classroom expansion, weight room expansion, and cafeteria expansion. 2, giving students a safe and accommodating environment. 3, giving students and staff an opportunity to be creative. There were many subjects about each of these points discussed with the public. CUSD No. 305 Superintendent Shannon Cheek also discussed several points of the need to pass the referendum. He showed a short video of the floor plan and talked about the high points of the addition and referendum. The public was encouraged to ask any questions they may have on why this referendum is needed. One point was the fact that students who are handicapped or have other medical issues cannot access the second and third floors. The chairlift takes up most of the stairway and doesn't work most of the time, even though it is continually repaired. Also, it is very slow. They feel the students deserve better than what they have. These issues are not wants, they are needs, he said. Cheek, as well as Hale and Van Osdell, were informative regarding the needs to improve the school. Cheek stated that he has been told by some people that they have toured the school and it sure changed. They have seen the many updates needed to make the school better and safer for the students as well as teachers and administration. The final open house of the high school will be from 5 to 7 p.m. tonight, Wednesday, October 30th. Another article, Township versus At-Large Voting on Ballot for Tuscola and Arcola, by Ben Crane. The 2024 presidential election is what most have been paying attention to over the past few months as we draw near to Election Day. However, a question that will be included on the ballot for Tuscola and Arcola residents has implications for the future of both schools' district board representation. The question will read something similar to, shall members of the Board of Education of, insert school district name, and Douglas County, Illinois, be elected in 2024 and thereafter at large and without restriction by area of residence within the district instead of the current restrictions that have no more than three members on the board, education may be selected from one congressional district in the school district. What the question asks is simply this: would it be better to allow all seven school board members to be elected from anywhere in the school district, or to continue to elect school board members with the current restrictions on geographical location? Currently, both Tuscola and Arcola are only able to elect no more than three school board members from a single congressional district, allowing the potential for four other members to be elected and representative of another location within the school district. The Tuscola School District recently made a change that will allow four members from within the city. It is important to note that this question on the ballot is legally required if a school district is to appoint a board member, which both Arcola and Tuscola have. Arcola Superintendent Tom Mulligan explained that the current method allows representation of rural areas within the district. However, to him, it doesn't matter either way. I don't think it's a huge issue. Regardless if it passes or not, it's never mattered who's on the board. We're always on the same page, he said. Tuscola Superintendent Gary Alexander echoed this sentiment. School board members are pretty much volunteers. I'm not concerned about at-large voting because no one is going to run for the board if they aren't actively trying to improve it, he explained. Ultimately, neither superintendents are concerned about the outcome of the vote. However, an at-large election could allow for complete representation from one side of town, one neighborhood, or even one street. The current system guarantees representation throughout the district to an extent. We'll move now to the obituaries. Ruth Ann Bush, 87, of Mattoon, passed away at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, October 22, 2024, at her residence in Mattoon. A private celebration of Ruth's life will be held at a later date. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Daryl Everett Reifstick, 80, of Tuscola, passed away on Wednesday evening, October 23, 2024, at his residence. Funeral services were held Monday, October 28, at the St. Paul's Lutheran Church, Sidoras. Burial followed in the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Visitation was Sunday, October 27, at the church. There's another article, Jobs Up, Unemployment Down in Majority of Metro Areas. Over the year, total non-farm jobs increased in nine metropolitan areas and decreased in five for the year ending September 2024, according to data released today by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Over the year, the unemployment rate decreased in eight areas, increased in five, and was unchanged in one. An expanding labor market and job growth across the state continues to instill drive and motivation in workers and job seekers searching for new employment opportunities, said Deputy Governor Andy Menar. IDES remains a critical workforce resource, providing essential employment and re-employment services to match individuals with the right employers eager to take advantage of the growing economy. The metro areas which had the largest over-the-year percentage increases in total non-farm jobs were the Carbondale-Marion, Champaign-Urbana, and Springfield. Villa Grove United Women of Faith hold fundraiser for Children's Home. On November 9th, the Villa Grove United Women of Faith, with the support of the Villa Grove United Methodist Church congregation, will again be holding their fall fundraiser for the Cunningham Children's Home in Urbana. For over 20 years, Villa Grove UWF have held a craft bake sale and sold tickets for an opportunity to win a homemade quilt to raise funds for Cunningham Children's Home, whose mission is to offer emotional, social, educational, and spiritual support to children, youths, and families by providing a safe, nurturing, therapeutic environment in which individuals may experience personal growth, learning, and healing. Founded in 1895 as an orphanage, today Cunningham offers residential treatment, independent living programs, and therapeutic special education to children and adolescents aged 5 through 21. At Cunningham, a community converges to give hope to those who need it most, youth who suffer from serious emotional and behavioral challenges and have been caused by abuse, neglect, mental illness, and more. Through comprehensive programs and services, they provide expert care to help the kids learn positive coping and behavioral skills, to achieve realistic academic goals, and to develop the life skills necessary to be successful in our community. This year, in keeping with the idea of supporting children and their families, the women of WGUWF have decided to make a gift, a portion of the funds raised, to Leslie Bates Neighborhood House in East St. Louis. Leslie Bates David Neighborhood House is a multi-purpose faith-based community center in relationship with United Methodist Church. Their mission is to empower individuals and families to move out of poverty and achieve self-sufficiency. Their aim is to ensure that a new generation of children has the support needed to be successful in school and in life. Programs include early childhood education and support, comprehensive support for full and part-time job seekers, including underserved youth, services to help the neediest in the community, including emergency assistance and meals for senior citizens. The quilt this year was pieced by Barb Fry, a member of the VGUMC quilting groups from beautiful bright batik fabrics in the Quirky Patterns pattern. The 68 by 86 inch quilt was hand quilted by VGUMC quilters. Tickets may be purchased for an opportunity to own the quilt from any member of the Villa Grove United Women of Faith. Tickets will also be on sale on November 9th from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. at Villa Grove United Methodist Church, where the United Methodist men are holding their annual pancake, sausage, biscuit, and gravy breakfast from 7 to 9:30 a.m., and the United Women of Faith will have a handcraft items for sale as well as homemade food items. All money received for the quilt or for the craft baked items will be sent to Cunningham Children's Home and Leslie Bates Neighborhood House. Any expenses involved in holding the fundraiser are absorbed by the Villa Grove UWF organization. Over the last 25 years or more, VGUWF has sent more than $60,000 to assist Cunningham in its mission to children and adolescents. The VGUWF looks forward to adding to that $60,000 mark this year and to sending a substantial gift to Leslie Bates as well. These gifts are both organizations will aid them in the caring for children and families in multiple ways. Come help us support them. There's an article, Study Shows Tariff-Induced Trade War Would Hurt U.S. Farmers, by Tandy Sloop of Farm Week. Ratcheting up tariffs on U.S. imports of Chinese products would place a target on both U.S. soybeans and corn and create a ripple effect throughout rural economics, according to a new study. Considerable discussion has surrounded suggestions of the U.S. escalating tariffs on Chinese products, which prompted the National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association to request the World Agricultural and Economic Environmental Services to evaluate the impact of a trade war which would have on soybeans and corn today. The conclusion of the study: a reignited trade war would reduce both U.S. soybean and corn prices and the combined production area of the two crops. A study forecasts Brazil and Argentina would claim the lost market share, likely lost to American farmers for decades. As the top two export commodities for the U.S., corn and soybeans account for about one-fourth of the total U.S. agricultural export value. The study specifically investigated the impacts of another potential U.S. and China trade war in which China responds to the U.S. punitive tariffs by imposing retaliatory tariffs on corn, soybeans, and soybean products, meal and oil, as would be expected to give the 2018 trade war an overall historical precedent. Corn and soybeans are prime targets for tariffs as the two top export commodities for the U.S. As the largest exporting state in the country, Illinois farmers can expect to pay an extremely heavy price, said Jeff Skates, chairman of the Illinois Corn Marketing Board and farmer in Shawneetown. ASA chief economist Scott Gerlt noted the U.S. agricultural sector is already going through a significant economic downturn. This work shows that a trade war would easily compound the adverse conditions that are placing financial stress on farmers, Gerlt said. Even when a trade war officially ends, the loss of product share can be permanent. Researchers modeled several scenarios that could play out in a new U.S. trade war and found a consistent outcome: severe drop in U.S. exports to China. If China cancels its current waiver from the 2020 Phase 1 agreement and reverts to tariffs already on the books, U.S. soybean exports to China would, according to the study, fall 14 to 16 million metric tons annually, an average decline of 51.8% from baseline levels expected for those years. U.S. corn exports to China would fall about 2.2 million metric tons annually, an average decline of 84.3% for the baseline expectation. Brazil and Argentina would benefit. Brazil and Argentina would increase exports and gain valuable global market share. Chinese tariffs on soybeans and corn from the U.S., but not Brazil, would provide incentive for Brazilian farmers to expand production even more rapidly than baseline growth. No place to turn. While it is possible to divert exports to other nations, the study found there is insufficient demand from the rest of the world to offset the major loss of soybean exports to China and support the farm gate value. The study found that a new trade war would lead to a steep drop in soy and corn prices, resulting in a ripple impact across the U.S., particularly in rural communities where farmers live, purchase inputs, use farm and personal services, and purchase household goods. Other recent studies examining the effects of tariffs arrived at similar findings. In the 2018 trade war, the U.S. extended its tariffs on steel and aluminum to several major trading partners and separately imposed tariffs on an extensive range of imported products from China. In response, China and other nations imposed retaliatory tariffs on numerous U.S. products, including many agricultural and food products. This led to significant reduction in U.S. agricultural exports to those nations. As a result of retaliatory tariffs from the onset of summer 2018 through the end of 2019, U.S. agricultural export losses exceeded $27 billion, with China accounting for about 95% of the value lost, according to the USDA. Farmers are definitely concerned about trade, said Michael Langenmeyer, an agricultural economist from Purdue University, who helps an author at Purdue University CMA Group Ag Economy Barometer. We don't ask specific questions related to tariffs in the Ag Economy Barometer, but one question we do ask is if they expect exports to increase, decrease, or stay the same. Really, this is the most pessimistic they've been for about 5 years with regard to trade. Another article, Illinois Deer Donation Program Rebranding and Expanding with Same Free Mission. The Illinois Deer Donation Program returns for its third donation season as Hunters Feeding Illinois. The name change is a reflection of an expanded partnership among Feeding Illinois, Southern Illinois Food Pantry Network, and University of Illinois Extension. The expansion Hunters Feeding Illinois has the same mission, to connect hunters, meat processors, and food pantries and support across to lean protein for Illinois residents and families. The expanded partnership covers 16 counties in East Central Illinois and 16 counties in Southern Illinois. The East Central Territory includes Champaign, Clark, Clay, Coles, Crawford, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Effingham, Fayette, Jesper, Macon, Moultrie, Piatt, and Shelby counties. The Southern Territory includes Alexander, Franklin, Gallatin, Hamilton, Hardin, Jackson, Johnson, Massac, Pope, Perry, Pulaski, Randolph, Saline, Union, White, and Williamson counties. Hunters are passionate about their sport and communities. We're incredibly grateful to see this program grow and help feed more neighbors each year, said Steve Erickson, Executive Director of Feeding Illinois. Hunters Feeding Illinois embodies the power of collaboration. Hunters, processors, food banks, and pantries coming together to provide nutritious meals to families in need. It's inspiring to see the generosity of hunters who donate deer, knowing that venison provides essential protein to our Illinois neighbors in need. Hunters donate for free like previous years. Hunters can donate whole harvested deer at no cost. Partnering meat processors are prepared to accept donated deer with the start of deer hunting season in October. Because processing volume increases throughout the season, hunters are encouraged to call processors in advance to confirm that they have slots to accept deer. Processors have a select number of slots for donated deer, which becomes more limited as the season continues. The following meat processors will be accepting meat donations: River Bend Wild Game and Sausage Company in St. Joseph, Mowiqua Packing Plant in Mowiqua, Conley Locker in Martinsville, Oconee Chop Shop in Oconee, Howe's Custom Deer Processing in Cowden, Windy Ridge Processing in Chaboniere, Blair's Slaughtering and Processing in Louisville, Salt and Strings in Louisville. Partnering meat processors in Southern Territory: R&M Meat Processing in Ellis Grove, Berkner's Processing in McLeansboro, Sanchez Meat Processing in Duquesne, Shirley Farms Deer Processing in DeSoto, Triple C Meats in Anna, R&D Deer Production in Vienna. Thanks to the collaboration with Feeding Illinois, your donations will be doubled, $1 for $1. A $50 donation becomes $100, which covers processing of one deer. In 2023 season, the processing preceded more than 300 deer and provided more than 12,000 pounds of venison to food insecure neighborhoods in Illinois. To donate, read more about the program, find a list of participating meat processors and more, visit go.illinois.edu/deer-donation. Follow the program on Facebook to see local impact through the season. Time for a couple of briefs. Tuscola leaf pickup. The city of Tuscola now picking up rake leaves as burning leaves within the city limits is prohibited. Citizens may rake their leaves to the curb or edge of the road for pickup. Piles must be free of garbage, debris, and other landscape waste. On Mondays and Tuesdays, pickup is north on the railroad tracks. The south side pickup is Wednesday and Thursday. Leaves must be set out for pickup by 7:30 a.m. on the pickup days. And that is all the time we have for this week. This is Chris here saying goodbye and see you again next week.